We've been spending 4 weeks looking through the letter, the book of Revelation, the Revelation of John, with broad brushstrokes. I mean, there are 22 chapters, and we probably were never going to do 22 sermons on this, but following in the Methodist Bible Month, we've had three studies so far, and the fourth one is this morning, fourth and final one. And I want to give you four letters to help you remember this sermon. Are you ready? O-B-N-J. O-B-N-J. Now, at first hearing, this sounds like a Myers-Briggs personality type, doesn't it? For those of us that do this sort of thing, then there is a sense in which various personality types among us will respond differently to the garish, fantastical images that we find in the book of Revelation. As I've said before, it is kind of comic book or graphic novel. That's the kind of book that we have in front of us, not perhaps to be read in the same way as history or gospels or poetry and the like that we read in the Bible. Or maybe you heard those letters O-B-N-J and you thought, sounds like a character in Star Wars to me. Maybe the long-lost brother of Obi-Wan Kenobi. And that is a reminder that, as in Star Wars, Revelation portrays the age-old battle of good against evil. May the force be with you, but woe betide if you stray on the dark side, we might think. O-B-N-J, what does it stand for? Old Babylon, New Jerusalem. Old Babylon, New Jerusalem. These are two cities that are described in chapters 17 to 22 of Revelation. And they are cities of extreme contrast. Babylon was the wealthy city located in what we know today as Iraq. It was the place to which many of the Jews were taken in exile around 587 BC. The place in which they strove to maintain their distinctive difference as God's people against the odds. The regime there that sought to force all people to worship the king. The place where Daniel stood firm and had the visions which are echoed in parts of Revelation. And for the Jews, Babylon is the personification of evil and the antithesis of the kingdom of God. And as John narrates his vision from the island of Patmos somewhere around 90 AD, and as those around him start to hear it and pass it on, they cannot but help think of another empire, a contemporary empire, the empire of their day, another one that seeks to enslave and impose taxes and require subjects to worship the emperor and declare that Caesar is Lord. And it is, of course, the Roman Empire. So when John's readers hear mention of Babylon, they know exactly who John is talking about. See, Revelation is a very political polemic. And NJ, or New Jerusalem. Only three times in Revelation is Jerusalem mentioned specifically. And yet the first time comes early in the book, and it is very significant. Remember perhaps from 3 weeks ago, the letter to the church in Philadelphia. And the church in Philadelphia is the church about which the risen Christ has nothing but encouragement to give. Others, there are criticisms, shall we say. There are ways in which they need to change, but there is nothing of that to the church at Philadelphia. They have kept his word. They have not denied his name. And he says to them, "The one who is victorious, I will make a pillar in the temple of my God. Never again will they leave it. I will write on them the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, the new Jerusalem, which is coming down out of heaven from my God." And so to them, and to all who hear the letter, including us, there is hope of a new Jerusalem where God will dwell among his people and we will dwell with him. But we're not done yet with old Babylon. We haven't finished with it in the past, nor are we finished with its impact in the present. Revelation chapter 17, you may or may not have read this. There was a bit of a challenge, I think, given as we entered Bible week to read through Revelation. But Revelation 17 speaks graphically of the great prostitute who sits by many waters, which in itself is another allusion to the ancient city of Babylon, sitting by, is it the Euphrates and the Tigris rivers, the many waters of those rivers. And this whore of Babylon, as sometimes she's referred to, has seduced people with her charms. She has been unfaithful and enticed others to be so. She has become drunk with the blood of God's holy people, the blood of those who bore testimony to Jesus. In these, don't forget, these sort of comic book, graphic novel kind of pictures, she is portrayed, depicted as riding a beast with seven heads and 10 horns. And we're told that the seven heads are seven hills on which she sits. And surely this is, again, this is the seven hills of Rome. Another sign that the empire is in view. There are also seven kings, five of whom who have fallen, and one who is yet to come. This leads William Barclay, commentator on Revelation, to conclude that the Roman emperor in power at the time of John's vision is the Emperor Domitian, yet another ruthless tyrant in a line of ruthless tyrants. And John's vision is saying that those who serve this whore of Babylon will be those who destroy her. And so often that is true, isn't it, for us? Totalitarian leaders sow the seeds of their own destruction and are conquered from within. What a day it was yesterday in and around Russia. Might there be something of that going on in Russia right now? The seeds of its own destruction already having been sown. Well, contrast old Babylon with New Jerusalem, from unfaithful to faithful, from solid to pure, from ugliness to beauty, from harlot to bride. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, says John, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for her husband. This is a place where God will dwell among and with his people. In words which I have used many, many times at funeral services, it then goes on, he will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. And how we might long for that time. But we're not there yet. We live in old Babylon, and yet with the promise of New Jerusalem. And that creates challenges and pressures. How are we going to be the people of New Jerusalem whilst living in old Babylon? There's lots more I could talk about from Revelation 17 to 22, but maybe that's enough detail for now. Let me talk about something that I love to do. And there is a point to this, just before you wonder. Something I love to do, walking. And you know that. Now, I know it's a notional figure without any particular basis in science, but I'm trying hard to reach my 10,000 steps a day. My phone, which is pretty much in my pocket all the time, tells me that I'm averaging 9,209 steps per day over the past 365. So I'm not too far short, but there's still quite a lot of work to get up to that level. And when I walk, I don't really do slow when I walk. I like to have a good walk. So I stride out purposefully like this. And some of you have seen me and some of you have walked with me, and I'm pretty much a 4 mile an hour walker. My wife, on the other hand, saunters. If we go for a walk together, I don't know how this works, but when I've taken my first 10 steps, I look back and she's more than 10 steps behind. I mean, how does that even happen? Now, I know, I know, you would know, Andrea. I know that I am about twice her height. But I still don't get it. Now, if we are holding hands, she keeps up better. She has to. But for me, striding is better than sauntering. Or was. These past few days, I've been wondering if I've got it wrong. Let me explain. I've been taken by a story shared by Pete Gregg, currently walking from Iona to Lindisfarne on pilgrimage. That is a pilgrimage I really like the sound of. But in Lectio 365, anyone using that in the past week? So, Kathy, you'll have read it probably. In Lectio 365, he talks of how in the Middle Ages, people used to go on pilgrimages to the Holy Land. Did I mention some of us are going at the end of October? But we'll be flying courtesy of EasyJet. In the Middle Ages, they walked. It was a long way to walk. Imagine walking from Britain to the Holy Land, or France, or pretty much anywhere in what we know as Europe. It would be a long way. And apparently, pilgrims many times, as they walked through Europe, and I guess particularly the French ones, for reasons you'll get in a minute, were asked on the journey where they were going, and they would reply in French, "À la Sainte Terre," to the Holy Land. And so they became known as La Santeres, or Saunterers. I love that idea, don't you? I love that idea of us being santeros or saunterers. Now, I don't think that what we call the Holy Land is necessarily any more holy than any other land, even though it's a place I've loved visiting and look forward to going again. But it is, at the very least, the land of the Holy One in Jesus, isn't it? And I love the thought of being called a santera, a saunterer, or a holy lander. Now, if we are people who are made holy in Christ, then maybe every step we take is on holy ground. Every step we take can be holy ground. Maybe the journey can be as holy as the destination. Every step we take in you. There's a song we could have sung today, isn't there? And perhaps at every stopping point of the journey, every place we plant our feet, we might be asking how we can be ambassadors of Jesus, ambassadors of the New Jerusalem in Old Babylon. How can we live as citizens of heaven, we might ask, while we are living on planet Earth? Yes, Old Babylon will finally be overthrown. That ancient serpent, we're told, otherwise known as Satan or the devil, will be destroyed, or as it's put in graphic detail, thrown into the lake of burning sulfur. And there will be a new heaven and a new earth with New Jerusalem descending from heaven and all things made new. does that just mean that we are to sit back and wait for it to happen? No. Some fundamentalists have interpreted the scriptures that way. They have said, why look after the earth if all things are going to be made new anyway? To which I say, because God made us stewards of his creation now. And why improve people's lot on earth, they might say, if the aim is to get them into a perfect heaven? To which I would say, perhaps because the aim is just as much to get heaven into people, including ourselves as people into heaven. Bring heaven to earth, Lord. I want to invite a little bit of congregation participation here. How can we anticipate New Jerusalem in old Babylon? How are we being people that bring heaven to earth? What ideas do you have? Based upon what I've said already, based upon what we've sung earlier, and that's a song, Bring Heaven to Earth, maybe, based on perhaps what we were talking about at our church members' meeting last Wednesday. How can we be people that bring heaven to earth? Steps back and waits to be overwhelmed with thoughts and comments, because I know you have them.
Christ came so that we should have life, but life to the full.
Yeah.
If people aren't having life to the full, then we should be the people who are working towards filling people's lives.
Great.
With Christ and with joy and
great.
With food and with...
Yep. Yep, so we should be people, hopefully ourselves, living life to the full and working so that others live life to the full in every way. Yep, absolutely. Thank you. Yeah. I think we do. Yeah. Yep. So in small patches, heaven comes down through the things that people do. Even people who are not necessarily people of faith can be used by God. You know, and very often are. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yep. Yeah. Yep, thank you. Okay, who wants to go next? Yep, so use our time, effort, money in the acts that we do. And that's partly, part of being saunterers, isn't it? About being holy landers. Everywhere we plant our feet, perhaps. Helen, I think you were going to say something.
We should realize that we can be faithful to him.
Yep. Absolutely. Be faithful to Christ as Christ is faithful to us, or God is faithful to us as Father.
Yep.
Yep. They do, you know, you're right. We can't feed everyone, but we can feed someone. Yeah. Anything else?
As a church, get involved in the Lace Hill Fun Day.
Yep, get involved in the Lace Hill Fun Day that we've been talking about. Great. And that is, just helping a community to have fun. Sorry, who was that? Thank you, Rosie. Yep, so Renew Cafe is a place where it's okay not to be okay. So providing a space for people to come and hopefully improve, we hope, mental health, but also not to be judged for it, to be accepted as who they are. Yeah.
And perhaps if we're sauntering rather than marching at 4 miles an hour, we're more likely to see the need instead of marching past it.
And no, it's okay. But some of you run, and that's faster than 4 miles an hour. But I haven't sort of put it down for this sermon, but you might remember when we were looking a couple of years ago, was it now, at the book, The Relentless Elimination of Hurry, that we talked about the 3 mile an hour God, that God is a 3 mile an hour God, because that is the pace of love. And perhaps walking at 3 miles an hour, you are more equipped to see where people are in need of that love than you are striding out at my speed. But so sauntering, santering, rather than striding. So one final contribution, maybe?
Don't get me
started. All right, I won't then. Graham. Yep.
Look for other opportunities.
Yep.
That opportunity for me is renewed. You know,
yeah.
Things like that. Don't give up.
Yes. Yes. So basically, you know, God never gives up on us, does he? So we always have a part that we can play, even if we wish, some of us, that we were much fitter now, like we were in our youth, perhaps. So there are all sorts of things, aren't there? And some of them come up, but I mean, things I put down. Wise stewardship of God's creation. We were talking a little bit at the members' meeting about using eco-friendly products, for example, but there are lots more things. What about seeking economic justice for all and buying fairly traded products where we can? What about working to end food poverty and an even distribution of the resources where so that no one is hungry? What about, I think this is particularly pertinent to us in the UK and Europe and beyond, what about speaking truth to power through perhaps involvement in politics? And what about that we recognize all people as equal and made in the image of God? What difference would that make with regard to our welcome to them and our hospitality? So these are all ways in which we can be people of the New Jerusalem here and now, as we prepare for our new home. And when old Babylon is gone and New Jerusalem is come, what a place it's going to be. First, it's described as a bride dressed for her husband. Then it's described as a giant gold cube, 1,400 miles wide and long and high, with 12 gates having the names of the 12 tribes of Israel and 12 foundations bearing the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb, and foundations decorated with jewels of different kinds, and the streets are paved with gold. And yes, there are pearly gates. But John is seeking to describe, in a sense, the indescribable. But this giant cube is said to bring to mind the most holy place in the tabernacle and the temple of the Lord, a place where God was seen as especially present, a place so holy that the high priest, even the high priest, could enter only once a year. In the New Jerusalem, this vast space, this vast place, every place we put our feet is holy ground. The whole of creation is the most holy place. I was reminded of an old poem from my youth by Christian poet Steve Turner, entitled Where Jesus Touched the Earth. Now, this is not to put you off going to Jerusalem, if you're thinking about it, by the way. But he wrote, I went to see, but others had got there before me and obscured his footprints with arches, buttresses, gold, and incense. I went to see where Jesus once touched the earth. I couldn't see for concrete and colours. So I looked further down. I looked to the ground. But the ground was 30 feet higher than back in AD 3. This is not where Jesus walked. I looked down, down to my feet, my legs, arms, chest. I looked down to where Jesus touches the earth. You have holy feet. Where you stand can be holy ground. How will that change and affect your worship, your witness, your treatment of God's earth, your love for all who are made in the image of God?